What's up? This is Robert Kelly. I'm in Calgary, still on the Just for Laughs tour, and I'm doing a special podcast today with a very interesting motherfucker who's been on the tour with me for the last 3 weeks, Mr. Bob Arno.
Monsieur Arno.
I should.
From Sweden, who doesn't know how to say fuck you in Swedish. Yes. There is just no translation.
If I might have to put subtitles on this or have somebody interpret it, if you can't understand some shit, just move on. But Bob is a legal thief. Well, a legal thief, but you're also a comic.
Yeah.
You do. Get a little laugh. You're funny.
Inadvertently.
Yeah. Well, not inadvertently. Methodically.
Lots of planning.
Lots of planning.
Swedish planning.
Right, Swedish planning, which is close to German planning. You know how that worked out.
Yeah, don't get in our way, because we will walk over you.
I got to just say something right now, though. It's so funny, because I'm doing this, we're doing this in the hotel, but Bob is like 7 feet tall, and I have him sitting in a chair, and he's just—he looks like just a fucking big stick. You're just uncomfortable. Are you comfortable?
I am comfortable. All right, well, yes,
You look uncomfortable.
No, I like to be in this position because it makes you feel uncomfortable.
What, with your fucking sack hanging out?
Yeah.
Does not believe me. Come on, I was molested fucking 3 times. Does nothing to me. Listen,
I have Italian pants. It's holding me in really nicely here.
His fucking sack looks like an old lady's vagina right now. But Bob is actually. I don't know if anybody has been to the show. I don't know how many fucking fans I have in Canada, but he's actually a pickpocketer.
Yeah.
A professional pickpocketer. I mean, he does it in a theatrical way on the tour, but you also teach police and government, and you go around and you hang out with thieves.
Yep.
You've been doing this for how long?
40 years.
40 years.
40.
Really?
Yeah, 20 years of those 40 really serious. The other 20 amateurish stumbling.
But 20 years serious.
I started
out
looking for bad guys in 1964.
Right.
Vietnam War.
Okay.
I was a photographer, war photographer. Okay. And I had a mentor. I had a guy who was seriously good.
Right.
And this guy, by accident, got me pointed to look for some bad guys.
So hang on 1 second. Let me stop you one second. So you were a photographer in the war, Vietnam.
Yep.
And you met this guy who was a professional thief.
Well, he was not a thief at all. He was a war photographer.
A war photographer also.
Took me under his arms, got me into places I would never have got otherwise. I was 23 years old.
Right.
I have no idea how to finagle, how to position myself to get good picture, how to get close to the action.
Okay.
This guy was close to the action.
Right.
While we were out there, in the same hotel, flop house hotel.
Right.
A major drug guy happened to live there.
Right.
A drug runner.
Right.
This guy I got friendly with.
Okay.
Inadvertently, or I would say by plan, or however you want to call it, some agency people, law enforcement, asked me to tack on to this guy. And that led me into the underworld, into the beast of the belly, or however you want to call it.
Hang on 1 second. Belly of the beast. But go ahead, do your thing.
No, I'm Swedish.
You cucks, I can say everything backwards. Belly of the beast.
That's right.
Beast of the belly. So you got into hanging out with these thieves.
That's right.
Because you needed to get you wanted to get the good shots. And then you got fascinated with these people.
You're going to remember that Saigon, that's the capital in those years, that's where all the bad guys were hanging.
Right.
And in Hong Kong.
Okay.
So from 1965 to 1970, the center of drug running, of money laundering, of all kinds of bad guys, they were hiding in that part of the world.
Okay.
They were making money off the military, from the casino, from the slots inside the military camps. There were hundreds of thousands of dollars to be made through the military.
They were cheating.
They weren't cheating. They were just not getting the money off those machines. They wanted to get it out from them in an illegal manner.
Right.
And so there was a lot of bad guys hanging in Asia in those years. I happened to have a room beside this guy. I got friendly with him. You as law enforcement asked me, could I tack on to him? And through that, I got to be very close to various strange law enforcement agencies.
Right.
That led me to a fascination to look at bad guys around the world. I was young. I was inexperienced. I had no idea how to kind of what we call social engineer. Social engineer is what hackers do.
Right.
They get close to people. They pretend to be someone they're not.
What you've been doing for the last 3 weeks.
Exactly.
Because you probably have all my social passwords. You know my fucking Facebook password. You're going to fucking rob me blind. That's great.
But to make that story shorter, It was a scenario where I was just fascinated with bad guys.
Right.
And for the next 10 years, I was simply an entertainer and a photographer.
So how did you get into entertaining? From photography?
I had a passion as a kid, as a hobby.
But what did you do as entertaining? How did you entertain back then?
A bad magic act, a bad show for the U.S. military. I stumbled.
You're a shitty magician?
I worked in whorehouses where the U.S. military sold. So the main thing is I wanted to find work.
Right.
So I could be a photographer half the time. I wasn't good enough to sell my photos all the time. But this guy, this mentor, had me in unbelievable places. For example, the Burning Monk, the suicide of Burning Monk. That picture was on the front of New York Times. Not because I was good in being there, but because this other guy happened at 3 o'clock in the morning to get to this place where the suicide was happening. We were three photographers.
You took that?
Took that picture.
What is it called?
It's called The Suicide of the Monk. I don't know, you know, I can give you a specific name of the monk. It's not interesting because we were three people at the same time.
If I wanted to Google
I can give you all of that information.
No, so right now. What is it?
Not a chance I can remember the pronunciation.
All right.
You know,
well, just for people listening, if they wanted to go see the photo.
June of 1963.
Yeah.
Three photographers that took it, I was one of them.
Wow.
So they will have to kind of Google all of that information.
Okay,
it's
so
it's boring today because it's history. It's way back. 1963. You remember that?
Dude, today that's crazy. You took a photo of of somebody on fire.
Yeah, well,
that's pretty crazy, dude.
It was pretty.
How is that boring?
Well, it's boring today because
dude,
you got to remember it's manipulated.
Let me tell you
something. The guy did not kill himself because he wanted to. It was the other monks. There were like five of them. There was a stick like they kind of drew who was going to be the suicide. They dragged him. He didn't feel pain. It was manipulation politically so that they could make a statement against the government to stop the war. It wasn't that one man, 25-year-old, decides that I am going to kill myself.
Well, I'm not going to get into the better way to fucking, what's a better suicide. You know, I didn't feel anything. Dude, he fucking died. Whatever. What I'm saying, it wasn't you didn't get noticed for a photo of a dumb tulip.
No,
you took a photo of somebody on fire.
Right.
That's fucking crazy. That's crazy.
10 feet away.
Okay, now let me ask you a question. So you're over here, you're a photographer, you meet this guy.
Yep.
You get into this underworld stuff. You're in a fucking crazy. You're a young kid in this crazy situation.
Yeah, I learned quickly.
And you like it.
That's right.
So now, how do you get from there
to pickpocketing
to being a pickpocketer?
From there, I became a semi-bad or semi-good entertainer. I would say within 3 years, I became a pretty fucking good entertainer.
Right.
And you know why? Simply because of the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War made me a great entertainer.
Right.
I came out with an attitude of, you know, pulling this here and holding up cards and rabbits and crap.
Right.
I couldn't get the attention, you know, within half a minute on stage for these young American GIs up and down Vietnam.
Well, let me just say something. You're in a whorehouse, Bob.
Yes.
I mean, it's a hard gig. I mean, it's pussy.
That's right.
Or fucking some young Swede.
That's right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, so I learned fast. Audience participation is the only way I could get them. Dragging them up and doing shit with them.
Right.
That's what shaped me.
So you suck their cocks.
Well,
no,
that's
kidding.
A word that maybe you know more about than I do.
I'm kidding.
So
go ahead.
How do you translate that into Swedish? Can you explain for me?
You know. I've seen some of your Swedish porn. So you actually said, okay, I can't physically just stand.
That's
I have
right.
to go and do shit
that's
to these
right.
guys.
Exactly.
All right, that's smart.
Okay, so pickpocketing is something that I had an interest of as an entertainer. You know, in the beginning, what can you do? The guys aren't dressed with anything. There are no wallets they're carrying. There's very little. So in the beginning, you stumble, you fumble, and then you get better. And I realized that the road to this was to look at real thieves, look at real pickpockets in the street. So I, for a journey of 15 years or so, I was hanging in, you know, Hong Kong, in Paris, in Rome, in between my bookings, in between my serious engagement, looking for the real stuff.
So you went from Vietnam to becoming an entertainer, a magician, and comedy, and
correct.
So you'd do these shows, and in between these shows, you would go and do research on thieves. Now, this is the weird thing: is that okay? You hear about pickpockets, you hear, you know, thieves and stuff like that, but it's still, look. I went to Guatemala, and the guy told me, look, you have to be very careful. These people can steal your underwear.
Yep.
But in my head, I went, and after I came back, nothing happened.
Right.
I didn't get, you know, I had you know, the money belts, and I was hiding my, I'll tell you a funny story. I literally had $400 cash in two money belts.
And you wanted them to touch you there because you hadn't been touched in a long time.
That was a good one, Bob. No, I was so paranoid, I kept counting it to make sure nobody took some.
Right.
I went to the bathroom at a restaurant in Antigua.
Antigua is a little far away from Guatemala, but never mind.
Well, it's in Guatemala.
I thought you said Antigua.
What is it? I'll have to Google it now. Okay. Antigua.
Let's not show either of us our ignorance for geography.
Okay, yeah, well, we're both wrong. Okay. But listen, I'm in this little town in Guatemala. All right? You fucking, fucking goddamn precise cocksucker. And I checked my money in the bathroom. I left the $400 on the toilet. $400 American.
By mistake?
On the toilet. I was so paranoid, I kept checking it. I left it on the toilet. We left. We were in Chichi Costamongo.
And someone come and knock on your door and say, no, hey, sir, you forgot
this. I was 3 hours away in the mountains. I robbed myself in Guatemala.
Right.
Literally what happened. So it's like these thieves, you never hear of it. It's like this almost like underworld, but it almost doesn't exist like folklore, but it really does.
It does exist. Yeah. You know, I mean, today I'm considered maybe one of the world's foremost experts at street crime.
Right.
I haven't always been that way. So for the last 20 years, I've been very deep in this shit. I mean, seriously deep.
Right.
But you don't get there simply by just having a passion. It's a long road in order to get the respect, in order to get the money to afford to go in and do the research and to get the law enforcement agencies to pay for the work that you're doing. So it's a very long road. But don't kid yourself. This crime does exist in some places more than others. Now, it doesn't. It's not everywhere. It doesn't mean that if you walk in the street of Aruba in the nighttime that you for sure are going to get robbed. You're not. But there are some places where you walk in the wrong street at 11 o'clock in a certain city, the chances of getting robbed is 75%. You just need to know the statistics of one country, one city versus another.
But there's two getting robbed. You know, Rio de Janeiro getting robbed, hit you over the head, kidnap you, kill you, and then there's your rob, which is you don't even feel them. An hour later, you're looking for your wallet, and
it's gone.
You're sipping espresso somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's what you're talking
about. But you got to remember that what you think about pickpocketing, or what most people think, which is that smooth stuff, the thing that you don't feel, it doesn't happen when you walk in the street. It's going to happen when you step up on a bus, when you're a little crowded, or an escalator, an elevator, maybe 11 o'clock in a casino, some broad come in and rubs her bum against you and from one side, and you think that she's coming on while the other dude is working from the side. So if you backtrack, every time that you lose your wallet or lose your cash, you lose your credit card, there is a very precise moment when they used deceit and misdirection. Deceit of the highest caliber. Because remember, we are animals. If you look on all of these animals, National Geographic, the prey, the wolves running around, the lions, they look for the weak, for the moment when you're most weak.
Right.
That's what the people, the gangs who do pickpocketing.
Now, where are the most pickpocketers? Where would you find the most?
You know, there's two ways of looking at it. You can look at the sheer statistic volume of where it's happening. And you can also say, where am I most impressed because of the cleverness, the devious way? I'm going to say that Barcelona is going to be extremely high in terms of just sheer shit happening every day.
Okay.
If you take a website, travel website, people going to Barcelona, you're going to see of 100 people, 15 of them, people have tried to steal. Not necessarily succeeding, but at least 15%, someone is trying. Now, you take Oslo, for example, in the summer. You're not going to have that kind of numbers. Not even New York. A French tourist goes to New York. He's not going to get pickpocketed. Mm. But if he goes down in the underground subway at the 5-hour rush hour, well, maybe there's a small chance he gets pickpocketed. Right. Same thing with London. So if you're asking for sheer numbers, yes, that's going to be something like Barcelona.
Now, what about finesse? What about the actual
style,
art of pickpocketing?
The
yes.
art of it? Yeah. I'm going to say Russia, St. Petersburg. I'm going to say Naples in Italy. Superb technique, because the police, they're paying them off, you know, they're paid so little money that there's a lot of, if not necessarily corruption, but the legal system is such that they can't afford to put the guy in jail. Mm-hmm. They have so much other stuff problem, tax problem, or terrorism, or burglaries, or cars blowing up,
right,
that they can't put a guy who's doing a nonviolent crime, stealing $60 from your wallet, even if they catch the guy, the system can't afford to put this guy in jail. So these guys get really good because they do it day after day after day.
Now, there's a certain code that you've talked about with these guys, though. If I got pickpocketed and I caught the guy,
yeah,
I went, whoa,
yeah,
he's going to give me my money back. Or is he going to want to fight me?
Well, you see, in South America, and that means all the way from our border down,
mm-hmm,
pickpocketing, they call them lanzatos, which is basically speed mugging. Well, it's not mugging as we know it. They don't push you against the wall. They maybe walk behind you. They see that the pocket is gaping.
Right.
They see the print of the money. They mean the four corners of the wallet. They come by. They dash into your little brush. They rip it off quickly. If you look at the speed by which the hand go in and out.
Right.
Now, you turn around. You felt the brush. You felt something. Well, the guy is already 30 yards away.
Right.
You run after this guy. Well, at the corner of the street is a partner with a knife. All this guy has to do is to knife you. Now, that's a different pickpocketing style than in Paris.
Right.
The majority of professional pickpockets do not want confrontation.
Right.
It's going to be much easier to just say, hey, dude, here's your wallet. Are you going to try and fight this guy? Or are you going to say, hey, thank God, I got my ID, my driver license. Why would I, with my wife, try and mess up a guy who maybe is on drugs?
Right.
So, confrontation among pickpockets is unusual. Unless you're in South America, expect trouble.
Right. Now, the funny thing is, and I've asked you this question before, you consider yourself a professional pickpocket, right?
Yes, I do consider myself a professional pickpocket.
Okay, correct. Now, you've been doing it for how long? 20 years. Correct.
As a good researcher, as a guy who can be out in the street and doing it, being accepted by them, yes.
Okay, now, you don't pickpocket people. You will do it and then give it back to inform people.
Correct.
You've never been arrested.
Correct.
You've never stolen anything.
Well, I've stolen lots of things, but it's been under the guise of either a legal department
or a
unit. Yes, correct.
So, all right, I want to get to that.
Never, ever, for the sake of benefiting myself.
You've never stolen anything just to get a sandwich at Subway?
No, correct.
You've stolen stuff, but it's for a specific job?
Correct.
That you probably can't talk about?
Yes, correct.
Right, so for whatever, the government?
We need these,
go get them.
Yeah,
and you've done it, but not for you.
Correct.
Okay, so, but you hang out with these people.
On purpose.
On purpose.
Right.
And now let me stop right here. You have a person that goes with you. You have somebody that goes with you, too.
Well, that is a complex thing to go into. I don't know how many minutes little part. But if I'm going out, there are two ways that I may want to hang with these guys. A, simply the respect of the day. I'm looking at the team over a couple of years. I recognize them. And I say, hey, these guys are truly unbelievable. I want to dig deeper in how come they are so fucking good.
Okay, right? Stop right there. I want to hear, remember what you're going to say. So you see these guys.
Yes.
You study them. They don't know.
How
do you get in with them? How is that?
Has to be over a 3-year period. Because they are not going to just, you can't just walk up to a guy and say, hey, listen, look at my iPod. See that? That's me working in Las Vegas. What do you think of that? I mean, I can put the 2-3 minute clip on an iPod and go up to a guy who I think is good and say, what do you think of that? He's going to laugh and say, that's very good. So you, Bob Arno, and he's going to laugh. That doesn't mean that he's going to spill his guts in the evening in the coffee house, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to kind of figure out, that's why social engineering is important. You take anyone who works in the intelligence community or security, you got to understand that the criminal mind is one of suspicion, because they're going to say, I don't want to go back into the joint, into the box, as they say.
Right.
Once you're out of the box, you don't want to go back in.
Right.
So anyone who starts a conversation with that person, yeah, the first thing is going to happen is that red flag, umbrella, or flags go up, because they're thinking that you're trying to mess with them and get them to spill secret. So unless you have a way of social engineer getting into their mindset, getting them to accept me, it's not going to work.
Right. Because it's like, it's almost like a cop who infiltrates a bikie gang.
Whatever.
And they don't smoke weed or drink.
Gonna have to be a long time.
That's you, because yeah, you're going into these guys and you're not stealing. You know, like, it would be easier for you if you could be like, dude, I steal too. Let's go get that lady and get her money and be like, split it. You'd be in like Flynn, right?
Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, they're gonna look at me and they're gonna know that I'm a foreigner. You know, obviously, I have to speak a few languages in order to be able to accept it or break some of the barriers down. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to do something funny in the beginning. I may have to sometimes offer something that they want. And, of course, that part I can't go into right now. But the bottom line is, over the years...
That's the most interesting part, you son of a bitch. Why would you even say it? Now I want to know! Everybody listening, they want to know. What the fuck?
Okay, let me... Let me go a little, just very thin on the outside. Okay. Let's assume that you're in a territory where some guys have served some time and they're concerned with the next time they're going into the joint. Let's assume that I somehow can say that I have a little association with prosecutor or whatever. You can reduce the time depending on what they talk about.
Right.
Maybe one can say that I am working on certain security things where... If I find a snitch among 10 guys, you know, anyone else in the gang who knows that he is a snitch, obviously he's going to be cut or whatever, hurt seriously. So you're going to find the weakest link among these guys.
Right.
And that guy, you're going to have to sort of start getting a relationship with and hopefully be able to dangle a carrot for.
Okay, so now, you know, I mean, and I do want to mention your wife, too, because she's Bambi.
Yep.
She,
it's an intricate part.
Yeah, she's, first of all, you know, she's sexy.
Yep.
Sexy lady. Okay. She's ballsy. She's got an attitude.
Yep.
And, she definitely.
Make a good team.
Oh, yeah, she definitely tells you to shut your sweetest face when you definitely need. You are a wordy cocksucker, Bob. You fucking 8 in the morning. What do you think about the shut the fuck up? But, you know, she goes with you too, and you say she's an.
She's intricate. On the other hand, she draws the line much further from the safety factor than I do. I mean, I take fucking chances because I'm older and I feel that, you know, I've lived a very long life and there is a bit of a rush factor in what I'm doing.
Right.
And, you know, it comes what comes. While she's probably is looking more at if something really goes wrong, do we want to get hurt? Do we want to have something really explode in our face? Well, I might be... Not a gambler, but I may look at people's expression and feel that I can read when the explosive moment comes.
Right. And what...
Stay away from it.
Does she sit in with you? Does she meet these people with you? Is she involved?
Very, very often. Yes, very often. Not, of course, not every time, because it's just from a language point and many other reasons, it's not going to work. But there are... times where, you know, I may be up at 2 o'clock in the morning in a bar in Johannesburg or whatever, and she's not going to come along on that.
Okay.
But most of the time we function as a team. Sometimes she's the front person because, you know, sometimes we have to be 40 yards. We have to sort of tag, and she is first and walks for a while. And if they sense her, I will tag. So we kind of shift until we establish that rapport.
Right. And you guys have been together for 20 years.
More, 25.
Now. 25 years. And has she been a part of this? Is that how it started?
Well, you know, I worked before I met Bambi long-term in Las Vegas for maybe 15 years in casinos and casino shows.
Right.
Now, there comes a point where that's not thrilling. You know, you wake up the next day and say, hey, listen, this is the third year in the same contract. Now, let's see if there's another side here, more fun. So when I married Bambi, obviously, she was quite young, and we wanted to see the world. And so when we started traveling, that's when we decided to take my prior contact with law enforcement and my going back to some of those contacts and reestablishing and starting this research. So we published a book. or rather Bambi was the one who was most instrumental in writing it on travel security, and then things just like a snowball. We couldn't step off. It just got faster and faster.
What's the book called?
Travel Advisory, How to Avoid Theft, Cons, and Scams.
Okay, by Bob Arno and Bambi?
That's correct. So the snowball effect is that we, I think, not necessarily by design, by fluke, that's a good word for this, we stumbled on an area that had not before had specialists. And so, you know, how are you going to be an expert at pickpocketing? Let's assume you're a law enforcement officer in New York on the pickpocketing detail. Now, most of the time, you stay 3, 4, 5 years on that detail, and then they move you on to something else. That means that in 5 years, you're going to get very good at pickpocketing in New York. But you're not going to be a global expert. You're not going to know that the guy in Johannesburg or the guy in Hong Kong work similar or telegraph or send the identity theft information to Bulgaria, Romania, and that they max out the cards with new type of SIM. I mean, it's just a very, very complex, very large thing. So in order to, I got this as a field, I would say, global field, where I didn't have any competition. It's that simple.
Right. Now, this is the weird part to me, is that it's almost like being Superman, knowing you can fly, but you can't, you never fly. It's like, if I knew how to fucking steal people's shit...
You wouldn't be in this hotel room and standing on stage. You would be taking $60,000 from one dude and be done with it for six months.
I wouldn't steal credit cards. I wouldn't want to take people's fucking lives. But would I be in a mall at Christmas and bump into some jackass and fucking steal his $20 in his wallet? Fuck
yeah. You know, 99% of thieves.
Because you can take watches, too. It's not just... Yeah. I mean, all right, let me just explain the show, what I've seen... Yeah. What I know, you bring people up on stage, you can take somebody's watch, you can take their tie off their neck, you can steal their wallet. I mean, you can literally take all this shit off of somebody, and they don't even know.
Bobby, can I stop you in the track?
Yeah.
What kind of fucking mansion are you going to live in if you're in the streets and you can steal a tie? What good is that?
Dude, that's not the point. You see, that's the thing. I would have my job, jackass. I would just love to steal somebody's fucking tie. That's some crazy shit, dude. That's like being taking a guy's watch off his wrist is...
So how much money is that? Now, let me just give you an example.
This bright.
A Rolex. How many places on this tour, how many Rolexes have you seen? Zero, except on your own wrist and Breitling. Right. Otherwise, we've seen zero.
Right.
So where are you going to see a Rolex... Maybe in New York, some lawyer, some hip dude in L.A. in the film industry or whatever, or parts of Europe where guys want to show up.
Right.
The point here is a pickpocket, 99%, is not making serious money in the streets unless they know how to turn the stuff, the social security, into identity theft. Now, I don't know of any good American pickpocket who is not making at least $3,000 a week. And they're doing it simply by stealing that ID theft, getting cash advance.
So it's not
from what you have in your pocket.
It's free. They want who you are.
Yeah, they want who you are.
And they want.
And if you're good at that, the sky is the limit.
This is an Oliver Twist. It's not a bunch of kids running around stealing watches and coins.
Now there is two guys in Romania and Bulgaria, Gypsy Kings, who sent 60 young people that they got from poor families, sent them into England, steal all across England, up and down for 2 years. Half of that money they had to send back into Romania. They live in palaces. It took the law enforcement close to 2 years to break the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys who sit at the top of the heap, serious money. Everybody else?
Right. So they do still have pickpockets, these kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who steal watches and wallets and all. They send it back in the...
Some parts of the world.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, my point is not about making money. The fact that you have the ability to take somebody's shit at an airport, a movie theater, an escalator, a mall, whatever.
And then
And you don't do it.
Yeah.
Just for shits and giggles. Just to be like, dude, check this out. Flap. Pull a fucking... You know, an Ocean's 11 on somebody, and they'd be like, check this out.
A good pickpocket, they call it have heart. Now, you would say, if I use the term have heart, you're going to say immediately, oh, that means that he has compassion. It means exact opposite. There's a rush factor when he puts his money into the pocket of the victim or into the lady's handbag.
Right.
A good pickpocket feels a rush for 2.5 seconds while the hand is in there. Right. And they call that have heart. You either have it or you don't. Unless you have that bit of criminal mindset, right, you're not going to get the rush factor. Right. I think that if you put your hand into somebody else's, you're going to say, hey, wait a minute, he's going to break my whatever, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to be reluctant. Right. A thief loves that moment.
Right. Okay, yeah. Well, here's the thing is, don't forget, I did steal your briefcase at the airport right from under your nose, and I could have been gone, you cocksucker.
That's right.
And you didn't even know.
That's right.
How's that make you feel? Huh?
Not bad at all.
I snatched that right from you. How's that happen? Huh? You know what it is you're a chatty Cathy,
yeah,
and once you get you, yeah, going, that's all you have to do to steal,
yeah,
from you,
yeah,
is just
bring
up,
talk.
Bring up, ask you like three questions.
Actually, you know, it's not quite true. When we travel, when we're outside in our own environment,
yeah,
we think about the 180 degrees of our back, meaning,
right,
you have 100 degrees forward, 180 degrees back, right?
Right.
If you're in any form of security scenario, you want to think about your own shit, you stand so that no one can be behind you, and then you watch forward, and you make sure that you have immediate contact with all of your belongings. Meaning, if I'm going to Rome, if I'm checking out from the airport with my bags, I'm pushing the cart, that's how I think. What's behind me, what's in front of me, eye contact all the time. You let that for a 1 minute slip, wherever you are, some guy is going to come up and say, hey, did you get this newspaper for today? They'll just do some crap. And for 2.5 seconds, that's what you think about. You don't pay attention to what's behind you. If anything is behind there on the floor, sitting down, attaché case, computer, lap case, whatever, bingo, they slide it away.
Now, how did I take your briefcase then?
Simply by it being on my side and me forward looking. We were in that lounge and, you know, yeah, that would be the last thing there.
I tell you what, though. When I was walking up,
yeah,
and I saw that your big silver CIA briefcase that,
yes,
you carry around,
yes, you felt cool.
Ah, when I grabbed that son of a bitch, I'm like, there's two ways to do it.
Yeah.
Sneak up. I'm
do
walking.
It fast.
I said, I'm walking up like it's mine, like,
yeah,
I own it. I walked,
right,
up, grabbed it, fucking walked,
oh,
away.
No, that's the right attitude.
Yeah.
That is the kind of confidence factor,
right,
which is why a comedian is, to some extent, what I would call a hoax personality. You go into this persona, which is why so few people can do it.
Right.
Social engineering and standing on stage and being a comedian, that is pretty close.
Right.
Pretty, pretty close.
Right. Well, this thing that you do, too, is you have a lot of showmanship, like Vegas, which I like. I like that stuff. I like old school entertainment, you know, there's a
little bigger than life, hit them over the head.
There's a lot more, there's a lot of going into,
yeah,
it, you know what I mean? It's fun to,
yeah,
watch, and you don't know what to expect, too. I mean, you see,
yeah,
the suits you wear these red Italian-made suits, you walk out, what are you, how tall are you?
6'5".
6'5", tall, thin Swede, walks out with a mustache.
Yep.
And they're like, you know, we're in the middle of fucking nowhere, Canada.
Yeah. These
and
people are staring up and saying, where did he come from?
Right. And then you start working it. And then,
right,
you start, and all of a sudden it starts building and,
yeah,
building and building.
Yeah.
Bam.
Yeah.
And then you're fucking, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you
kind of have them in the hand. You have,
right,
to. Right?
And now,
yeah,
you, where do you live now?
Well, my home is Las Vegas.
Right.
200 days a year we travel. And then we have a summer place in Sweden.
Really?
And Sweden is good for the summer because it's, you know, 105, 110 in Las Vegas. Who wants to be June, July, August in Las Vegas?
Right. Yeah. It does fucking blow.
Yeah.
That's so now you're leaving the tour tomorrow. This is,
yeah,
your last night.
Yeah.
Now, did you have fun in this fucking thing? Or was
of
it?
Of course. It was a whole new. Do you know what I learned more? First of all, it was fun because seeing Canada at big theaters, that's kind of a break from the corporate gigs that I do. I mean, my income stream comes from what they call keynote, which could be a luncheon type things where you're sort of semi serious, or in the evening where you simply is going to be fun. But this thing gave me a new attack mode. What I learned more than anything, and I hope that you feel the same way, we never should stand still. Every day should be an experience for the road of going further. So looking at how each of you guys took situation and jammed with it, I felt that I've been a bit stale, playing too much inside the box safe, simply because management said, don't you dare do this because that would be politically incorrect.
Right.
Taking a bit of a chance and taking every individual and kind of attacking it hard.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's hard for you too because you had to go out at the beginning They split your setup. Yeah. They made you go out while the people were literally walking in.
Walking in, correct. Yeah.
And you had to do this.
You could grab them really fast.
Well, I'll tell you this, though. Is my favorite part of theater, when I go to theater, is the beginning when you don't, this guy, whoever it is, comes out, and you don't even know if the show started or if this guy's just some drunk
asshole.
Should
I pay attention or should I not?
And then all of a sudden you realize.
Yeah, that this is.
And then you're watching it. Mm-hmm. You didn't even know you were watching it. Mm-hmm. And then it starts.
Yeah.
And it's like, so, I mean, I don't know how you felt about it, but that's one of my favorite parts of theater.
Actually, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked.
Yeah.
You know, I have no regrets. Would I have been able to walk away from this tour if they had allowed me more minutes to put that early part together with the other one?
Right.
I would have probably much bigger laughs and all of that. But you
let's
know,
let's not get carried away. Probably not.
They
probably not.
Probably not.
No, you're not as funny.
Absolutely.
I'm kidding.
A fucking chance that I would have done better. But you know,
I think
this
the funniest
they booked me. They booked me this way.
The funniest thing you said though is you stole a guy's asthma. What is inhaler? And the poor guy, you're like, come on up and get it, sir.
Yeah.
But he's walking up like he's gonna die. And you're like, hurry up, I think you need two puffs of this. I mean, why would you steal this fucking inhaler, Bob? I mean, what? Don't
take
have
a chance,
have
right?
A heart. Like, but
a heart like the pickpocket have a heart or the other
no,
one?
No,
have
no,
a
real
heart.
Fucking heart. Not your fucking adrenaline rush for 2 seconds.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what it's all about. You've got to take a chance, you know. I've had dentures and condoms and all kinds of crap in my hand from people's pocket.
Right.
And sometimes you say, well, I'll let that stay because I don't know how personal it gets or whatever, right?
Right.
And other times, you know, the other thing is the demographic. Because understand that today, humor, the people who buy the ticket, is a very different crowd.
Can I stop you 1 second? Were the dentures and the condom in the same pocket? All right, go ahead. Forget it. Go ahead.
You know that if you want to be a comedian that appeals to 15,000 in an arena,
right.
That's a different crowd than we'll see a John Cleese presentation.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, I still have to understand that my money comes from the corporate entertainment, so I still have to be inside the box to some extent.
Well, you have to find your people.
Yeah.
As in, you have to find your people, and sometimes your people... In the very rare occasions, is these 20,000 big arenas.
Yeah.
Some people have
comedy
clubs. Yeah, the attack is different.
Is different.
But it's, you know, it's...
Or it's, otherwise, why would only one or two guys be able to field an arena?
Right.
There's a reason.
Yeah.
But
the thing is...
I mean, you and I would love to be able to fill an arena with 20,000, but neither of us is, right?
Right.
So certainly that humor has appealed to a huge demographic that decided to buy a ticket because they want that stuff.
Yeah, right.
If you tell that comedian, could you tone it down a bit, buddy? He's going to say, well, fuck yourself. This is me, right?
Yeah.
Am I correct or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So now you go back to where? What do you do now?
Well, I have a very tight schedule now. This coming week, I have two corporate. Immediately, I go down to Dallas, then I go to Las Vegas, then I go to Sweden. And then back to Las Vegas where a film team will meet me and we put the final touch on the film that we've been working on for 4 months for National Geographic.
And what's this film going to be about?
About my life.
About your life.
Well, how I meet with these guys. Why they spill their guts to me. What is it that makes them kind of talk? We're not going to go into everything.
But is this going to fuck you, man?
You're
burning bridges.
Yes, I am.
So you're burning bridges.
Look at my age. You know, this is the point in my life where I can say that, hey, I can start burn my bridges.
You're right. I mean, 100's fucking old.
So why not? Okay, so, you know. Yes, I'm burning bridges.
Yes, so you're burning the bridges. It's over for you in certain places.
100%.
Well, you're going to be the guy who fucking did a TV show on National Geographic
these
guys.
Yes.
Now, do you think they're going to want to take you out? I mean.
No, I don't think so. Now, I think they're going to still look at me as a kind of a funny clown, and they're going to, you know. I mean, some of them are going to be angry because they're going to make less money. But the reality is also that the world continues and information is leaking out and all of that. I think hopefully that they're going to say some of this might. In anyhow become aware. So there's going to be some places where they're really hostile to me, and I'm going to stay away from those places. And
Russia?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Well, that's crazy, man. That's fucking crazy. But now this National Geographic movie, is this just on National Geographic? Is it going to be on DVD?
They
own it?
Who knows? They own it, yes.
Okay.
Except that all my footage, my archive, I still own. But, you know, 85% is going to be fresh made stuff by them. And so the 15% comes from my archives.
Right.
And the rest is their stuff.
Okay. So now you're going to give me a video, a little video. I'm going to put that up on the on my app and up on the Twitter, a link to see Bob Arno in action. You've been on, I mean, seriously, I mean, David Letterman. Name the shows you've been on over the years.
I haven't been on Leno. Otherwise, I've done them all. All of the news program, the ABC 2020, you know, Good Morning America, NBC Dateline, all of them. But,
so
you know, but it's over the years, you know. And, so
and you can YouTube Bob Arno and see his shit. He's done a lot of stuff. It's pretty crazy. But he's going to give me a little clip so you'll be able to check him out, actually what he does on stage. And the other stuff on the internet is actually cool, too, because he actually goes into crowds and stuff like that. And he talks about these thieves, these pickpocket thieves. And it's pretty interesting. So it's going to be sad. You're going to be off the tour. They're replacing you with some other dude who's...
Hopefully he will fill my shoes.
Now,
not 6'5".
Who's going to fill your shoes? He does not come from Las Vegas. My name is Bob Arno. I am very analytical. But Bob, it was a pleasure hanging with you for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And you're an interesting guy. You and Bambi, your hot wife.
Yeah.
And,
that's what I think, too.
Yeah.
I'm happy to hear that you think the same way.
Yeah, she's very hot.
Right, yeah.
That doesn't make you uncomfortable? Of course
no,
not.
I mean, I love the fact that my wife I look at and get so much fun of just looking at, that the rest of the world thinks she's attractive, too.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. And fucking okay.
Yeah. Wouldn't you want the same way with your own wife?
No, if you looked at my wife, I'd fucking attack you. I want a fucking tall, good looking thin glass of water.
Don't you want others to say, hey, that is a nice looking. Huh?
I don't want you to do it. I don't look over and you're finger blasting her. She doesn't even know. Instead of stealing a wallet, you steal a clitoris. I smell this, Robert. So. It was a pleasure, man, really. And thanks for doing the podcast.
Great.
And what's your website so people can go?
It's Bob Arno in one word. That's www.bobarno.com. Now, if you do want the other one, just simply thiefhunters.com.
Thiefhunters.com. All right, so go check out those websites. Interesting motherfucker. Really good guy. I'm glad I got to know him.
Spell it out. Should I have done it a little faster, maybe?
No, I just...
because I'm not knowing exactly the quality of... who listens on,
right.
I mean, your demographic.
Fucking six people. That's it. No. I have no idea what fucking... I do this. I have no idea. I don't care.
Okay.
I just do it, and it's for my own pleasure,
no.
So I can have these archived conversations
fabulous.
With people that I like. Mm-hmm. I actually go back someday and listen to these and be like, oh, that's where I was.
Yeah.
You know, so there's people that like them, but I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But Lee, you got me wordy now, you cocksucker, you wordy Swede. All right, that's the end of the podcast. I'll talk to you fuckers later. I hope you enjoyed this one.